This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Do students still need a college degree? Or has higher education become too expensive, too slow, and too disconnected from the real world? Rising tuition, declining public trust, and employers who say graduates aren't job ready have pushed higher education to a breaking point.
Our guest, Arthur Levine, is one of the country's leading thinkers on this moment of reckoning. He's the president of Brandeis University and a nationally respected scholar who argues that over the next 20 years, college will be reinvented or left behind. Today, we ask the hard question, is college still worth it? Arthur Levine, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you, and you have been studying this very question. I think a lot of people think this is a new question, is college worth it? You've been trying to help reinvent college and university for a long time. What do you think this great upheaval is? That's the name of your most recent book, of course, The Great Upheaval. What is it?
You know, the nation is changing profoundly. We're moving from a national analog industrial economy to a global digital knowledge economy. The last time we had change at this scale, at this rapidity, at this continuing rate, was the Industrial Revolution. And what happens when you have change of this dimension is that every social institution gets left behind. Colleges, government, corporations, the world is just changing so quickly that it's necessary for every one of them to recalibrate where they are and catch up with a society in motion.
So we live in a community, an affluent community of Park City, and I feel like at the same time that parents and probably even students are questioning higher education, they're still going to send their kids to college and students still want to go to college. I wonder how many valedictorians have chosen not to go to college. Do you have any idea of things like that? Are people actually deciding not to go other than, you know, those who maybe say education, higher education is just not for me. I was never a great student. I'm not going to do it.
I do have those kinds of numbers, actually. What we find is that in rural areas, only 29% of students are graduating from college. What we find is that in urban areas, that number's up to 45%. So that people are making different choices, but people are still going to college. The rate hasn't diminished. But the concerns are real. Higher education is most successful when it has one foot in the library. And what I mean by that is the accumulated knowledge of humanity and one foot in the street. And when the world changes quickly, we lose traction with the street. The things that you raised, higher education is slow to change, that higher education has resisted change, that it's too expensive, were the primary criticisms of higher education in 1820. So that what happened was, it was the Industrial Revolution, and higher education had to catch up with the rest of the world. And that's what's happening right now.
I think that that's such an interesting acknowledgement. I believe that we have these century cycles that kind of go on, and we tend to see them. And the Spanish flu and COVID kind of lining up that way was an interesting example of that. And the fact that the Industrial Revolution was so prominent in 1820. And you talk about this in your book and in many of your articles about how we need to learn from the past. We can't just constantly project to the future. And especially at this moment in time, the future is constantly reinventing itself right before our eyes. It's hard to even imagine what we're going to be looking at in 20 years. What are some of the lessons that you see from the past that are really informing our current situation, or should be informing it?
Actually, the issue you just raised is fascinating. I just finished writing a comparison between the Spanish flu and COVID.
Oh.
And what happened was the symptoms were almost the same. What there was a huge mental health crisis on campuses. What there was a generation of students coming to college who were fragile. The lesson to learn, there's one big lesson to learn, which is that higher education needs to gear itself to the real world, that Nobody wants to go to college if it's not relevant to the real world, if it's not preparing you for a career. And that issue is particularly large in rural areas where people are leaving the area for lack of jobs, in which the areas are very low in terms of needed technical and professional help, everything from nursing and healthcare through accounting and all kinds of technology. The end result is that in order for people to have a chance, a future, they absolutely need higher education. Do they need a baccalaureate? Not always. Do they need an associate degree? Probably. But they definitely need some post-secondary education to prepare them for a world that's dependent upon having those kinds of credentials. The one thing we've learned is that higher education is the only, or education in general, is the only path out of poverty for kids.
I believe that that's true. And my family and my husband's family have always really valued higher education and made it a priority. However, I also see this generation coming up who, much like 20 years ago, where kids might have seen being an athlete as a way out of certain situations. And, you know, yes, it was probably a pie in the sky for most kids, but it was still this dream. I see kids now thinking, I'll become an influencer, or I'll make an app, or something like that. I personally have my understanding of why that's not just enough, but what kind of things, even if they are going to be an influencer, even if they are going to make an app, what kind of things is higher education providing for them now to support those dreams?
Really, and when we talk about making apps, I can't wake up tomorrow morning and decide I'm going to make an app. I don't know how to make an app. So what we're really talking about is this educational challenge. We live in a time in which we're seeing a digital revolution. And you need an education to prepare you to do that. And even the examples that are often thrown out are the heads of many of the tech companies didn't complete college, but they went to college. And it's not that they didn't go to college at all and they just went into their garage and made apps. They went to college, but when college stopped being able to provide what was necessary, they went off on their own. But they had the education. They had superb educations. And that's the real lesson that comes from here, which is that, yeah, it's wonderful. One of the fallacies used to be that poor kids could become athletes. Well, there are a limited number of athletic positions open. There are a lot of other positions that are open that are wonderful positions, the kinds of positions you can support a family with, but you can't get there without college. The people for the most part who are criticizing higher education, you're right, they're sending their kids to college. Higher education has some appropriate criticisms, but you have an extraordinary higher education system in Utah. And it would be a shame not to take advantage of that higher education system. And the reason it would be a shame is not because it's a strong higher ed system. It's because every kid in Utah who's capable of higher education needs it to guarantee a future.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Arthur Levine. He is the president of Brandeis University, and he's also the author of a book called The Great Upheaval. We're talking about if a college education is still worth it, like it used to be. So we've established that higher education is still a must. I'm wondering how you have seen, and I know you have been known to be, you know, directing Brandeis University in a way that is adapting so that it doesn't become extinct. And you talk a lot about liberal arts schools. You know, there's this point said for such a long time is we need to educate our young people now for fields that don't even yet exist. It seems to me that liberal arts schools, they're teaching kids how to think. And so isn't that a tool to prepare you for a job that doesn't yet exist?
I absolutely believe that. It's necessary but insufficient. So you mentioned, what are we doing at Brandeis? Well, we're doing two kinds of things. One thing is, you know, every college has general requirements. It's sort of this common core, the things we think every person needs to know to be able to live in this world and thrive. So that what we're doing is we're reinventing that common core. And what we're saying is, look, students today don't need the same set of skills that parents needed. They're going to live, as I said before, in a global digital knowledge economy. And what that means is they need all kinds of skills and knowledge they may not have needed before to thrive. And those include things like digital fluency. That's just a new form of communication, but they need it now. But they need the things they've always needed. They need to be able to solve problems. They need to be able to communicate. They need to be able to work together. They need ethical systems. All of those things are still essential. We also set up something else, which is we're calling it the Center for Applied Liberal Arts. And what it means is every student gets two advisors when they walk in the door. One's an academic advisor, one's a career advisor. What it also means is we want to give students all kinds of practical experiences. So internships, but also let's use instructional methods that are practical, like case study teaching. Let's do simulations. Let's show how the liberal arts apply in the real world. And finally, let's create a second transcript. And in contrast to the traditional transcript, which has courses you've taken, the grades you've gotten, this second transcript lists the competencies, the career-aligned competencies that you've achieved while you're in college. So that if what I want to do is, I want to be a journalist like you two, and I need certain kinds of skills. I need to be able to do research. I need to be able to communicate. I need to be able to engage in a digital world. I need to be able to, on and on this goes. What we will do is give you a transcript indicating all the experience that you've had. Maybe you've worked at a newspaper. Maybe you've worked at a radio station. Maybe you've done digital communication. That'll be on your transcript. So will all the competencies you've achieved. And we're very lucky the Educational Testing Service in Princeton believes this is the future of higher education, focusing on outcomes. And they're helping us build it for free.
Yeah. Which types of universities will go away? Because I know there's going to be a big separation here. How do you see that for the future?
What's going to happen is that, and it's a shocking number, 20 to 25% of all colleges and universities are going to close. The ones that are most likely to close are small, private, low endowment, low selectivity institutions. The closure rates will be largest in the Midwest, the Middle Atlantic states, and New England. But you're going to see them in Utah too. You have private institutions there that are going to feel pressure. They're going to feel demographic pressures, even though Utah has the youngest population in the United States. They're still going to feel it. And we're going to see competition between the privates in Utah and the publics for the most part. So we'll see that. We're also going to see community colleges change. I think they'll become increasingly digital. And so will the regional universities, those universities that are intended for the entire state of Utah, but a region of Utah. And I think they'll become increasingly digital as well.
We do have the advantage, however, as I think you point out in your book, of being in a place that's hotter geographically at the moment. People are moving west. They are moving to the coast. And so population is a part of that, right? I think the thing that I'm most concerned about that you bring up in your book also is this idea of our already incredibly divided socio-political wealth gap happening right now. Will that just be more and more divided? Because the cost of college is so extraordinarily high that it's becoming this elite thing, even with financial aid, to be able to go to a top school. And so, I mean, socialization matters. I know that online, some online providers are terrific and they're providing amazing information, but you do networking, you do hire your friends, you do want to work with people that you trust. Like, how do we navigate this reality?
What you're raising is a huge concern for the country. Every time we've gone through major change, there's been an income redistribution, with it concentrated at the top of the pyramid, and with people at the bottom of the pyramid who tend to have the skills that are least adaptable to the new era and the least amount of education, suffering higher unemployment rates, lower incomes, and feeling left behind. The only remedy for them is college. All college doesn't have to be terribly expensive. And what community colleges in the main are affordable. There's no reason why every student shouldn't be able to go to a community college. But the question becomes, what about really talented students who might do better with a technical education or might do better by attending a four-year institution but can't afford it? That's a real challenge for us. It's a real challenge to the state of Utah, because Utah needs people who have that kind of experience. It's going to need people with graduate degrees. Yes, it's a hot state, but the question is, are you getting the population you need, and are you providing the resources that are going to be necessary to develop the economic base? The reality is that I've found that I can make the argument for expanding support for higher education to both liberals and conservatives and legislators in legislatures. And the grounds for liberals has always been opportunity. Everybody should have this opportunity. It's equity. But what I've found for conservatives is that they're much more interested in the fact that this is about labor market. This is about economic development. I'm not talking about different programs. I'm talking about different reasons we need the same program. And that's going to be critical for Utah to embrace, and every state to embrace. The future is going to depend upon the quality of education. And for universities, God, there's this great quote. There's this book called The Education of Henry Adams. Henry Adams' great-grandfather was president of the United States. His grandfather was president of the United States. And he went to Harvard in the 1850s. And he said, you know, he was a journalist and a historian. He said, I had an 18th century education to live in a world plunging into the 20th century. Harvard hadn't intended to offer an education that was 200 years beyond the times. The world changed quickly. And that should be a real question for universities. What are they going to do to make sure that they are up to date, to make sure they're preparing people for this century and not the last century, to make sure they're preparing people for a knowledge economy and not an industrial economy? That's a real challenge, and universities can't ignore that.
For sure. I think many of us talked about the article, I think it was in the New York Times, about a professor who was lamenting that there were kids arriving at their four-year university who had never finished a whole book, who'd never read a whole book. What, besides encouraging our kids to read, can we be doing to support our elementary ed kids, our high school-aged kids, to better prepare them for whatever kind of secondary education that they're going to go on to?
Right. We're at a blip at the moment. What happens is we have the COVID generation, who for the most part are now of college age, and we're going to see them for a while, and they're less well prepared. They had weaker educations. So the message to universities is, you can't educate the students you want to educate. You got to educate the students you have. And what you do is you pick up students where they are, not where you wish they were. And that's the lesson for universities. There's a wonderful, there's a community college called Amarillo Community College. And one of the things they found out was they did a study of Amarillo, Texas, which had high poverty rates and had high unemployment rates. And they did a deep dive into who their students were. And what they finally did was they named that data Maria. Maria was a student who was the typical student. She was a Latino woman who had two jobs, two kids, single mom. That's not Park City I know I'm describing. But what they then did was they geared the university to Maria. They found that to register, Maria had to go to seven offices. Maria doesn't have a lot of time. Maria now goes to one office. They found that the timing of the courses were great for the professors, but not nearly as good for Maria. So they changed the timing. And they did a whole series of things, some far more profound. That's what universities need to do. Now, school systems, there's no excuse for providing the kind of education that students had during COVID any longer. And what school districts need to do is realize the world they're preparing students for and give them the skills and knowledge. What they need to do, yeah, books are important. Reading is important. They need to give them the skills to be able to do that. But they also need to make it appealing. I had a daughter who didn't read, never read, until Harry Potter came out. And then I couldn't get her away from books, and now she's a reader. The fact of the matter is, let's find stuff that interests kids that we can get them excited about, and we can make them readers.
I'm sure you hear stories all the time, like the one I'm going to briefly tell you. My nephew, who was never a great student, smart kid, not a good student, he wasn't going to go to college. And at the last minute, he decided he was going to go, I think, because all of his friends were going. So he gets there. This was just this last fall, Montana State University in Bozeman. And he takes his first class. He goes into his first class. And after the first day, he quits. He says, this is not for me. But his roommate had found this technical college that had a carpenter education, technical education. So he joined that. He's absolutely in love with it. His talents are surfacing. He gets kudos every day from his teachers, and he really found the right thing. Which schools are adapting in this way to say, hey, we need to know our students, and when we know them, we find that we need more technical education? Or is that just being left to technical schools and or community colleges?
It can't be left to just technical schools. So you talked about being a carpenter. You know, we have a name for that at the doctoral level. It's called material sciences. There's a continuum of stuff from carpenter to material scientist. And the question is, there's something for every kid. We can't force every kid to do what it is, whatever parents think their kid ought to be doing. We ought to find something they love in their lives. And this anecdote just occurred to me. For the holidays, we were visiting our daughters and grandchildren. And I was talking to the six-year-old grandchild. And I said, so what are you going to do when you grow up? And he said, I want to be a window washer. And I thought, this is pretty good. I don't have to put any more money in this 529 college fund. But the reality is, my wife is busily looking at programs in window washing science at the master's level. The fact of the matter is that he's going to need post-secondary education. He's probably not going to be a window washer. But if that's what he fell in love with, we've got to find ways for him to do that and make a living out of it.
Absolutely. We spoke to someone who has formed a whole business around helping businesses adapt to AI. So not just digital, but a very fast moving AI world in which he says businesses will become extinct if they don't adapt, if they don't put into practice. And it makes me think about someone who's becoming a window washer. You know, these types of businesses, I don't know if you're going to get AI to wash your windows, but I think it's something that we'll still need humans to do. But the business application part can be all AI, you know, the scheduling and the business development and all of that. And so it's interesting to see the shift there. So it's not just a digital shift, but it is an AI shift.
And it's going to be a huge shift. We don't know the dimensions of that shift yet. A few years ago, McKinsey, which is a consulting firm, study said that 53% of all of our jobs, not 53% of jobs, But on average, 53% of every person's job is going to disappear because of digital technology. Now, what that means is, if you go back and you talked about, we talked about history a moment ago. During the Industrial Revolution, one of the things that happened was we mechanized farms and farmers got unemployed. There were no jobs for those farmers. They weren't trained for the jobs that did exist. And so what we need to do is, it's not that there weren't jobs for all Americans, it's the jobs that were available changed. And that's what's going to happen now. All jobs won't disappear. The factory of the future won't be one person, a whole bunch of machines, and a dog to make sure the man doesn't touch the machines. What it's going to be is a whole series of jobs we can't imagine either. And last night we were having dinner with some friends. I told them about my six-year-old grandson. And they said, that's not the real problem for him. What happens when they invent glass that doesn't need to be washed? And I thought, oh my God, my grandson's 60, he's already unemployed.
Well, the conversation, Arthur, is just so interesting, and we appreciate someone like you who makes this your life's work to figure out the answers to this question. Arthur Levine, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I know you're not promoting your upcoming book, but the fact is you've got an upcoming book. Can you tell us a little bit about it, and or maybe just come back and join us when it comes out?
I'd be happy to come back very, very quickly. What the book is about is, after the last book came out, my co-author and I got invited to visit lots and lots of campuses. So we got to see what campuses are actually doing to respond to the great upheaval. And this is a book about what works.
Wonderful. Well, we will look very forward to speaking with you again, and we'll look forward to that book. Our guest has been Arthur Levine. He's the author of The Great Upheaval and the president of Brandeis University. Arthur, what a pleasure. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. You two are terrific.